Hi, I'm Paul Pardy, and I want to welcome you to Microsoft Virtual Academy. I'm here with Jerry O'Brien, and we're working through the top 20 C-sharp questions. These are questions that we found on the internet that a lot of people are asking about C-sharp, and we've been providing you a look at how to answer these questions by showing you code and walking you through that code. So this next one, we're on number 12, and this one is how to get the index of the current iteration of a for each loop. So when you're in a loop, many times you want to get the number that you're on inside that loop, the index number. And in this demo, we're going to show you how to do that. Now, this is something that used to frustrate me as a young developer when I first started coding, because some of the ways that we're going to show you to get the index aren't intuitive. And so I always thought, you know, if you're in a loop, you should be able to tell what number you're on inside that loop, particularly if it's a for each loop. You should know that you're on number 3 in the loop or number 4 or whatever. So we're going to show you ways that you can get the current count for the loop during the iteration. And there's going to be a couple of methods that we're going to show you on how to do this. And a lot of the ways that you approach this depends on the type of collection that you have. So based on the collection, you can get the index one way. If you have a different type of collection, you're going to need to get the index another way. So we're going to show you actually three different ways that you will get the current iteration for the collection that you're in. So let's go to the demo. I've got three code blocks. I've got two of them commented out. We'll get to those in a moment. But each of these is essentially a for each loop. But we're creating different types of collections for each of these blocks. So in the first block, we're going to create a dictionary object, and that's what we're doing here. We're going to call that dictionary object diction. We essentially instantiate that object, and you can see there's a key value pair in a dictionary object, which we're going to essentially call out here. We also have a counter, which we're going to set to 0, and we're going to do that for a very specific reason, which I'll show you in a moment. And then this block of code just adds items to that dictionary. So we've got the key is 1 here, the value is 1, and you can see as we go down that we're just going to add those values to our dictionary.
And Paul, one of the things that I wanted to mention for maybe some of our viewers who are really new to C-sharp or perhaps have programmed a little bit in C-sharp before but are new to what's known as generics. Now, generics have been in mm-hmm. C-sharp for a little while, and this is known as a generic collection. So this is a generic dictionary, and you can correct. Tell that because of those angle brackets and the variable types. That's right. That are included in there. So this is a strongly typed dictionary, and it's using the generics functionality within C#.
Can you use ints instead of strings for that dictionary?
Yeah, absolutely, because sure. And that's a key for generics, is because the keyword is generic, it means that we can use sort of whatever type we want. But the important aspect is they're strongly typed. So in other words, this is called a dictionary string. Visual Studio will generate errors if we attempt to put integer values
that's
in here, or something other than a string.
That's a good clarification, and that's why we declare it this way. And it works really well, particularly because you always know what you're able to put into those lists or into those collections, so it really helps to specify that. Thanks. So we're populating our diction variable, and then we just have our loop. So we loop through each object in the collection. We're just going to use this generic object keyword to pull out the values in that collection, and then we're going to write out the counter. We're going to write out the index of each item to the console app. Now, the first question I would ask as a new developer is, what number am I on? So as I'm iterating through the for each loop and I go through each item in the collection, which number in the collection am I on? Well, the dictionary object doesn't have an index that we can actually reference. So what we've had to do is create this counter, which is essentially an int here. We set it to 0. And then each time we go through the loop, we increment the counter by 1. The counter plus plus increments that counter by 1. And that's what we're putting out to the screen. So the first time through, it's going to be 0. And then each time after that, it will be incremented by 1. And that's because we can't call any index object on this diction variable. There's just no index that's available, so we can't call it out. And this is what was counterintuitive. Why do we have to create a new variable and then iterate it, which seems like it's disconnected from the actual collection? But that's how dictionary objects work, and other arrays work in exactly the same way. There's no index that you can call, so we have to create one and then iterate over that item as we're going through the collection. So let me run this and I'll show you what that looks like. So as expected, it goes from 0 to 6 because as we went through the collection, there's actually 6 items, 7 items in the collection, but it's 0 based. So we have 7 items here, but it starts at 0. So it outputs exactly what we expected. But notice that what we're outputting is the counter variable, not any index inside the collection itself. It's a separate variable that we're calling. And that's something that, important to make distinctions as you're working through collections like these. Okay?
Yeah, I think that's key too, Paul, like you said, is that counter variable is a completely separate variable from that dictionary object. So we're not actually pulling out the index of any specific item in the collection or in that dictionary. It's just simply a counter variable that we're incrementing, but we're doing it on each iteration of the loop.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes. All right, now for in this second block, we're going to create a new type of collection called a list. And again, this is a strongly typed list. As Jerry mentioned earlier, we're going to be using the string keyword to specify that the list can only contain string values. So we create this new string collection, and we're going to just call it string list, and we add items to it as we did before with the dictionary object. This does not have key value pairs. There's only one value that we can add for each item in the list, and so we do that here in this block.
And Paul, there's one thing that I did want to mention. We look at this code sample, and I think this is just a matter of when we did the proofing on this, this was one small thing that we missed. If you happen to catch one of the earlier sessions, which was string versus string, this is a prime example of where uppercase string and lowercase string really don't matter. But there is a typo here. So we've declared a list of type string using the uppercase and then used the new keyword later using the lowercase. And you know, Visual Studio didn't complain, but just for completeness' sake, let's change those back so that
should this be
you can do them as you're same as me. You have big fingers on the keyboard
yes.
periodically, and so the choice is yours. You can make it an uppercase string or a lowercase string, and it'll work perfectly fine.
Well, we should be consistent with the earlier guidance. What did you recommend earlier? Is that you declare with the upper?
So you declare upper if you're going to use. In this instance, if we're going to use a potential static method or a class method, we would use uppercase.
That's right. So these should be lower.
So these should be lowercase because we're actually going to deal with string variables.
Good.
So we'll use the lowercase string. I just didn't want to confuse
the
viewers if somebody looked at it and said, well, why are they creating a string class but then a string variable later?
So, that's a great illustration of the point that we were trying to make earlier. So that's perfect. So now we've got all of our strings in the right case, hopefully. And we can go through our loop. So we've created the variable, we've populated it, and now we have our for each loop again here at the bottom, just like we did with the dictionary object. But notice there's a distinction now with how we're calling out our index. So the list object allows us to get the index of each item in that list. So as we're iterating through the loop, we can actually pull out the index of the item that we're on within that iteration. So that's what this line does. It essentially assigns cur index, which is an int variable that we declared earlier. We call out the index of the item that we're on. So we want to know the index of this str variable, which is what is iterated over the course of the loop. So as we go through the loop, str is populated with each item in that string list, and we can get the index of that, and then we write that out to the console. So this object, and it's the list object that allows us to do this, we can actually call out the index of that object, and then we can populate a variable with that index, and then we can write that out to the console, or you can use it elsewhere in your code. So this object enables us to get that list. We don't have to create a separate variable. So we'll go ahead and run this. And again, we get the same result, right? Now you'll notice that this is zero-based as well. It starts out with 0, goes to 6. There's 7 items in our list, but we're actually calling out each item by using this index of, and then we get the item variable through using that method. So that's a nice, and it's a cleaner way to me. I like it because it just feels cleaner. We're actually using the index of the object rather than creating a separate variable and iterating over that variable. All right, and then we're going to just show you one more. It's very similar to the list. I'll go ahead and comment this out, and then we'll just do an array list, which is very similar to the list that we looked at in terms of how it functions for this demo. We create our array list in the same way. We just declare it here. We populate it in this block, in the second block here. We just add items to it, just like we did with our list. And you'll notice as we iterate over the course of the ArrayList, we can use the index of for the ArrayList as well. So that object also supports an internal index that we can reference as we're iterating over the objects in that list. So as we pull out each item, we can say, what's the index of this item? We get a number back, and then we can repeat that number out to the console. So let me go ahead and run that. It should look exactly like the last one. And there you see we have 7 items, 0 through 6, and we're using this index of method to ask about the index of that item in the array list. And then we put that in the variable, and then that's repeated back. So the important thing to note here is that as you're working with different objects, some objects support the array index of, so you can get that index for that item in the collection. If it doesn't, just create an int variable and iterate over the, as you're iterating over your list, just increment that int variable, and then you can use that as the index for the item that you're on. It's a little disconnected, but it always works because the logic of the code will ensure that each time you increment that item, it will map to the item in the collection that you're on. So you'll always have a one-for-one mapping there.
Yeah. And a couple of extra points on that too, Paul, as we wrap this particular question up, is that if we think about the code samples that we just saw, if you're deciding, or if you're using a collection that doesn't actually implement the index of, and how you'll know that is you can actually search in the documentation for the methods of the particular collection you're using. If you don't see index of, you know it's not supported. So that's a quick way of determining whether you actually have the right collection that will support index of or not. If it doesn't support index of and you're going to create your own counter variable, such as you saw in the first example where we did the counter plus plus, be cautious about where you put that counter variable. If you put counter plus plus before you do any execution within the for each, you will increment it before you intend to. So in other words, if Paul's code would have put the counter plus plus before the console.write line, it would have incremented that and we would have ended up with our count starting at 1 instead of 0. So just be cautious about where you put that. Be a little careful about what we call the post-increment and the pre-increment on those iterators as well. So,
and that's a great point. And sometimes I do actually want my count to start at 1 because other items in my programming, some APIs actually have are 1-based rather than 0-based. So sometimes I'll start my counter at 1, but most of the time you want to start at 0. And most modern APIs start at, they're 0-based, so yeah, that's a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. So those are the distinctions. Those are two easy ways that you can get the item, the iteration of an item as you're going through a loop. And it depends on the object that you're using, whether you need to use an external variable that you need to increment each time, or you can get the index of. And you can tell that by determining whether the method supported for those objects.
Yep.